Hello again and welcome back. Now to the other propositions on Tuesday's ballot. All are proposed constitutional amendments. We discussed Proposition 7, the transportation tax increase, during the last segment. The others are Constitutional Amendment 1, the so-called Right to Farm Bill. Amendment 5 would establish the unalienable right to bear arms with a requirement that the state uphold that right. Amendment 8, to create a veterans lottery ticket with revenue produced required to go to veterans projects and services. And Amendment 9, to secure citizens' electronic data and communications from unreasonable search and seizure. We have with us in studio, Marshall Griffin joins us from Jefferson City. Chris McDaniel of St. Louis Public Radio is with us in studio. Thank you both for being with us. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Thank you.
Lots of territory to cross during this the few minutes that we have. Chris, I'm going to start with you. The right to bear arms, I think, is second only to Amendment 7 as the one getting the most attention. Give us a little synopsis of what that's all about, as you see it.
Well, when people go to the ballot on August 5th, it's going to read a whole lot like the Second Amendment. Should Missourians have an unalienable right, that the right to keep and bear arms is unalienable.
You have as much trouble saying that as I do.
It's a tough word. It's a tough word. So it reads a lot like the Second Amendment. So I think a lot of people who are voting on this will think, yeah, well, that's covered. Sure, why not? But I think that really belies some of the actual substantive changes that this would occur. If voters were to approve this, it would subject all of Missouri's laws pertaining to gun rights or gun control to strict scrutiny, which means that we would have to have an extremely good reason for infringing upon that right. And probably the most substantive thing that this would do is I think it would call into question a lot of our requirements for concealed and carry permits. And we might not be able to regulate those anymore.
Well, we had Chief Dotson on yesterday, and he was very much concerned about that. He said it would allow criminals to carry guns, for instance, with some justification.
And he was part of a lawsuit challenging the ballot language, and they were ultimately unsuccessful, a large part of that just due to the closeness and proximity to when voters are going to be voting on it. Absentee ballots have already been printed and stuff like that.
So what are the critics saying? Are they just basically saying, we've got the Second Amendment, so what do we need this for?
Well, critics like Sam Dotson are saying that this is going to have actual impact. So that's one of the things. This is going to have an actual impact on law enforcement's ability to enforce the law and to enforce conceal and carry permits. The other argument and the other knock against this is that the ballot summary that voters are going to receive doesn't really tell you all of the things that this is going to do. It just sort of reads like Missourians should have the ability to own guns. I don't think I'm being very outlandish when I say that this is probably going to pass.
In the state of Missouri, I think there's probably a pretty good chance that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Marshall, we had a politician in the other day, Rick Stream, who was running for county executive here, and he basically said that any time you have the word gun associated with any legislation, politicians are going to jump all over it. Do you get the sense that that's exactly what happened with this in Jefferson City?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the last 2 years have been very gun-heavy as far as a lot of the debate on the House and Senate floor, and specifically not so much as regards to this constitutional amendment, but the related bills that went by the name the Second Amendment Preservation Act, or as it's commonly called by our colleagues in the media, the Gun Control Nullification Bills, basically taking aim at any attempt by the federal government to regulate gun control within the state of Missouri.
Chris, is this going to have any impact on federal laws?
I mean, no, it can't. I think that some of its supporters might like to believe so, but I think that nullification has been pretty much well settled at this point in time. But what this does do, I mean, there are sort of two reasons for this. One is that state legislators can say, hey, constituents, this is what we did for you. We strengthened your right to bear arms. And then the other big reason for this is that it's a really great way to get conservatives to go out to the polls. When conservatives see that there's an amendment going that could strengthen the right to bear arms, they're going to go.
And this is an election year, as I recall.
apparently, this is an election year.
I believe it is.
Well, that might have had something to do with it. We can come back to this, and perhaps folks listening would like to get into the conversation, but let's touch upon these other things. Marshall, I'll turn to you for the Amendment 1, the right to farm. This is a lot more complicated than some people might think, or just saying, you know, don't we already have that right? But it's more complicated than that.
It is more complicated, and it also depends on your definition of the phrase "right to farm." The opponents of this particular constitutional amendment say that there are enough protections that already are in existence, and that what this is the right for large corporations to engage in farming with as little government intervention or interference as possible from the state and local level. Supporters of the right to farm amendment say that this is basically an attempt to protect small family farms from radical leftists who occupy groups like PETA and the Humane Society of the United States, and their attempts to get the federal government to pass or put into place more federal regulations designed to drive small family farmers out of business. So you have both sides of this argument saying, "Oh, we're supporting the small family farmers," but it's the guys on the other side who are trying to destroy them. So it's basically which philosophical argument are you going to believe and support?
But the only mention is of family farms and ranchers. There's no mention in it of corporate farms.
There is not. And one of the things that the opponents have cited is that, in particular, this proposed constitutional amendment would be beneficial to Smithfield, which originally a Virginia-based company that was purchased last year by a Chinese-owned corporation, or I should say specifically a Hong Kong-owned corporation, which is also under the government of China, that the purpose would make it a lot easier for this particular company to open more CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, in Missouri, and possibly thwart state and local pollution laws.
Chris, this is one of the concerns that people have, is the foreign element into this equation.
Yes, and I haven't been following this as much as Marshall has, but as someone who's particularly interested in campaign finance, a lot of the groups that Marshall has been talking about, they've been putting their money into this race. Against Right to Farm, the biggest contributor is the Humane Society. They've put in $375,000 for ads against this, which is, that's a considerable amount of money. And then on the pro Right to Farm side, the biggest contributor is the Missouri Pork Association. They've given more than $200,000 for this.
Marshall, one of the things that we can note is the fact that this, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, this would limit state oversight. And I guess this is what has environmentalists concerned. Isn't that not right? With regard to runoff and things like that, the state would have limited ability to deal with that sort of thing.
Well, that's the argument that the opposition is putting out there, that it would make it a lot more difficult for state and local governments to pass or to at least maintain the current environmental protections, and that it would open up a flood of lawsuits against state and local governments regarding pollution laws. Now, I did also talk to a law professor at the University of Missouri, someone that actually teaches courses in agricultural and environmental law, Erin Morrow Hawley, and she actually disputes that claim a little bit. She did say that some of the local zoning laws might be subject to challenge, but that she didn't see a floodgate of lawsuits pending if Constitutional Amendment 1 were to be added.
There is a puppy mill quotient to all of this. We've gone down that road before here in Missouri.
Yes,
but a lot of the critics are also suggesting that this would open the door for that sort of activity. Do you see it that way in the language as you read it?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, this is the right to farm amendment, and the right to farm push grew out of the puppy mill battle. It all started in 2010 with the passage of Proposition B, which was not a constitutional amendment, but a statute approved by voters, which was why it was so easy to overturn and to roll back some of the reforms that were passed in 2011. But out of that battle grew this idea of, well, if state law can be changed or be passed in which can limit the number of dogs a breeder can legally own or legally have, who's to say that those legal limits won't someday extend to cows, to pigs, to horses, you name it. And that was the driving argument that the proponents of the right to farm constitutional amendment used to get this far.
Chris, as I said at the outset, it's more complicated than people might think. There are a lot of moving parts, in a sense, to this whole thing, aren't there?
There are. And, this really, it feels a little bit like the puppy mill battle 2.0. I mean, you have a lot of the same players, and you certainly have the Humane Society, who's worried that this right to farm would make it, really hard to regulate how dogs are made.
If there's a limitation, Marshall, on state regulations, does food safety come into play?
There is that argument. Yes, the opponents of right to farm say that if this constitutional amendment passes, that it could also make it a lot easier for companies that use genetically modified organisms, aka Monsanto, to push their products and make it a lot harder for people who want to avoid those to be able to guard against them. As far as say an adjacent farmer, the adjacent farmer who wants to use GRO. As opposed to someone who doesn't, being next door to each other, it would the legal recourses might be smaller. I should mention that I did contact Monsanto for my initial story and report on this, and they basically said, we don't have a comment other than to say that we are neutral in this. We're not supporting the constitutional amendment one actively. We're neutral on it.
Before we move on to some of the other two proposed amendments, anything you want to add to this discussion before we turn from it?
Well, other than as far as the fundraising goes, it's easy to see that the supporters have a larger have took in a lot more money as far as advertising goes, but the opponents have been running ads as well, and they've got a nice little nest egg as well, or had one before they. Before they authorized the commercials to be put on the air. So both the opponents and the opposition currently hitting the airways with TV ads leading up to next Tuesday.
Chris, this is your bailiwick when it comes to funding such things.
Any
further thoughts from you on
no,
this?
No, I think we've gone through a little bit of who's really paying for those ads, so I think
sure.
I think we're done.
Okay, let's move along to the next on the list is Amendment 8, the Veterans Lottery Ticket. Marshall, this sounds to some like another election year proposal.
Yes, and it's one that can easily be an issue that gets voters to the polls. Everyone, regardless of whether you're conservative or liberal in Missouri, I believe everyone is concerned about the state's military veterans because people from all political persuasions have served in different branches of the military. But basically, what this would do is create a scratcher ticket in which roughly 25 cents of every dollar made would go to veterans programs, be it veterans homes or different programs that provide help for veterans in different areas. There's no active opposition against this particular proposed constitutional amendment, but there has been criticism, particularly earlier this year during the legislative session. Jeremy LaFavor of Kansas City basically came out against this, saying, there's got to be a better way, a more efficient way to fund veterans' needs. It should be done through the general fund, not by creating some scratcher, some scratcher lotto ticket. He thought that was a bit of an insulting idea as far as the best way to help veterans. Proponents have said, well, it's better than nothing. This is a good way to get something started and provide something for the veterans who live in the state. So,
Chris?
Go ahead.
I think that there are some critics of this who are worried that this is going to take money away from education funding, because that is where this funding goes. And if people go to the gas station and they see, well, here's your normal scratcher, and here's the scratcher that funds veterans and takes care of veterans, which one are you going to choose? You're probably going to go for the veterans one.
Yeah, that argument has been made, but if there's one thing that's in particular is that none of the educational groups, like the Missouri School Boards Association, no one is actively opposing this ticket, maybe because it would look bad to oppose something that would help veterans, but they're all remaining neutral on this. And some of the proponents have argued, well, you know, a lot of people who buy lottery tickets will buy more than one type. You know, they may buy one that helps the veterans while buying, you know, two, three others that help schools. So, you know, no one is out there, you know, actively opposing this, but there are some people that, you know, that don't like, you know, possibly this approach to funding veterans' needs.
In the next minute and a half, and that's all we have to talk about Amendment 9, the protection of electronic data. Chris McDaniel, we also have protection against that as a result of a Supreme Court ruling earlier this year.
Yes, this does a little bit more. So the Supreme Court said that you're secure in your cellular phone. So if
need a warrant to get at this information.
You need a warrant if you want to go through this. What this would do, and some people have said that it wouldn't do that much, but I disagree. I think this goes much further because it actually protects your data, and it goes to a lot of the different things. We're all going into the cloud where all of our information is, and it's not really on these physical devices anymore.
Yeah. Marshall, your thoughts about this Amendment 9?
Well, there is, like Amendment 8, there's no active opposition against this. The Missouri Sheriff's Association officially neutral on it, but in my conversations with them, they actually kind of sounded like it might not be a bad idea. They fell just short of, in my opinion, fell just short of endorsing it. And, you know, the old saying, politics make strange bedfellows, well, you know, there's two Republican lawmakers that are backing this. And the ACLU, which often butts heads with Republicans, are also supportive of this amendment.
And just a word, I've heard it said that many legislators approved this particular proposal without fully understanding it. Is that your understanding?
I would be shocked if the legislature would do something like that.
Let's leave it at that. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Chris McDaniel, thank you for being with us. Marshall Griffin, welcome back from your vacation in Alaska. I hope you had a great time. But thanks for being with us.
It was beautiful, but it's great to be home.
Thanks, Marshall. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk about Cinema St. Louis's second annual Children's Film Festival, about the Commonwealth Project's collection of local music to accompany sculptures in City Garden, and about the Pulitzer Arts Foundation's Marfa Dialogues. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk to two local historians who have written books about regional involvement in the Civil War. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Erica Smith, Aaron Dorr, Kyle Jacoby, Amanda Huntingfort, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.